Our guest on this week's show was Chris Lindahl of RE/MAX Results. Chris started his team in January of 2015 and now are a top 10 team in the U.S. in less than 2 years. Whether you're an individual agent or a team, there's lots of takeaways for you. We look into the explosive growth of the Chris Lindahl team, the role culture plays, and how they're leveraging both traditional and new marketing to grow their business. Welcome to Mobile Agent TV. I am Michael Thorne of RE/MAX Little Oak Realty in Langley, B.C., and my co-host, as always, is Dave Faulkner from Bridgewater, New Jersey's RE/MAX Preferred Professionals and the Enviro Realty team. Dave, you have a staggering record over the last 3 years of doing this show when it comes to predicting teams in the World Series and the Super Bowl. You know, you've had a very good record of that. So that being said, we missed it last week because we're catching up on Mets and some other things. Let's go. Let's hear it off the top of your head. Let's give me your 2017 Super Bowl combatants.
Jets. I'm picking the Jets. I like the Jets. I mean, because I'm a Jet fan. Be honest with you, I'm sorry. I have not done my homework. But I do do my homework on one thing, though. Right now, tonight, the Mets, who are in the hunt for the wild card, are playing the Minnesota Twins.
Oh, there you go.
We're looking for help from them because they're like one of the worst. They are the worst team in the American League.
You guys will get the W.
They are. They just are. And so we're looking for a little help, and we're going to play them 3 in a row, and I got a feeling we're going to sweep them. So that I know.
Okay. Well, that being said, Dave, I'll put my prediction on the record right now, and then next week we'll catch up.
Give me next week. I'll do my homework. I got the homework.
I unfortunately have to say the Patriots are going to be there again, and I'm going to go with my beloved Seahawks. I'll go Patriots Seahawks in the Super Bowl 2017 there. You know, you're a sports dude, Chris. Before we haven't introduced you yet, what do the Vikings look like this year?
They'll be in the Super Bowl for sure this year. I mean, they're I don't know if you saw, but Boomer Esiason picked them to be in the Super Bowl this year.
Did he?
Boomer says so.
We're in. We're going to win.
Okay. Awesome. Hey, guys. So we're now broadcasting over YouTube Live and not so much on Google Hangouts anymore. So if you're watching on Google – or sorry, if you're watching on YouTube and you can sort of come out of the blog, if you're watching on Mobile Agent TV, you can go onto YouTube. If you have your Gmail, sign into YouTube, and I'm going to keep an eye on the live chat there. So that's where the chat will happen, as well as I'll keep an eye on Twitter using the hashtag MATVLive. It's right there, as well as at Mobile Agent TV. You can get us two as well. I guess it's over here, right? It's reversed. I think it's over here. I don't know.
Either way.
Next week, guys, we're going to come to you live from RE/MAX Recharge in Toronto at a special time. That's going to be 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday, September the 21st, live. And our guests are Lori Van Dinther, Kim Miner, and Keith Roy. We're going to sit down roundtable. Actually, Integra and Valerie Garcia is spearheading this. They're doing a bar camp that day for all brands, and then the Recharge event is the next day. So it'll be just as the bar camp is wrapping up. We're going to have a fun roundtable show with three great guests. I can't put myself in there. Today's guest, as always, we read out this 160 Twitter bio. You can get today's guest at Chris Lindahl. I'll spell it because first and last name might have issues. KRISLINDAHL. And it reads, real estate, tech savvy, game changer, striving to make a difference. I work hard so I can give more back. Hashtag Chris Lindahl, chrislindahl.com. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you.
Now, we were starting just as the show started and talking about a little bit about your history. And that's actually going to be a bit of a theme of today's show, I think, Chris, is just the history and the growth that you've had. But for those that aren't familiar with Chris Lindahl or those that will get more context of understanding your real estate journey, what's your history in the real estate space?
Yeah, so I started with the biggest regional brokerage in Minnesota in May 2009, we did pretty well there. And actually, Sarah Pickens, who I hired a year and a half in, that co-runs the team with me, we started at that brokerage, and we left there in August of 2014. To move to RE/MAX, which is the best move of our career. And we started the Chris Lindahl team in January of 2015. And so we're a little less than 2 years into our team and learning every day.
And sort of, I teased up the show on what I thought was a really head scratcher stat, and you can give a little bit more context to that, Chris. But that is the fact that you started growing your team in January 2015, after your move to RE/MAX, and now you sit as one of the top teams in the country. But that just didn't happen. I mean, there was a lot of things happening before then that put you in the position to have that kind of growth. You were a successful agent doing a lot of deals by yourself. What was that trigger point? And obviously, I'm guessing it happened with your previous brand, the moment where you realized, I can't be doing this by myself anymore. It's time to sort of expand that. What was the trigger to start the Chris Lindahl team?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So in 2000, you know, in one of the things, and we talked about this before we went live, and Dave mentioned, like, if anyone has rapid growth, you have to wonder, like, if it really is legit or what happened or how do they grow so fast. And my comment back was that we were actually doing a lot of volume before we started the team. And in reality, we probably should have started a team 3 years before that. And so if you look back to like 2013, so myself and Sarah as the admin, we did 147 transactions. And then in 2014, we did 175. And then when we started the team, we jumped to 369. And now this year we'll be between 625 and 650. And really what happened was, it's not that we made major changes in our business. I just think that it was my fault for not having a team sooner, because the brokerage I was at, that's the commission structure didn't allow to add team members. And I had a limited belief that I couldn't even grow a team at that brokerage. And I thought I needed to be at that brokerage because they were the biggest local brand in town. And I saw so many other agents within that brokerage, and none of them really had teams with the exception of like an admin. And they just, and they were 20, 30 years into business, just working and grinding their ass off. And I'm like, this is just not what I'm going to do for the next 30 years. And I started, and so when I joined RE/MAX Results and at the beginning of August of 2014, I started to see real quick, I got the first couple of rankings, and I remember being way down the list going, geez, there's some bigger hitters at RE/MAX than there were at my previous brokerage. And so Sarah and I were like, we've got to start a team, because we're missing so many opportunities. Our customer service is not amazing. I mean, let's be honest, doing 175 transactions between myself and one admin, like, how could the service be great? So we learned from some mistakes, and one of the big things for me is just always be a student, and I'm looking around, I'm interviewing people, talking to people. And I realized, like, we have something that's a lot bigger than where we've led it to believe or where we've led it to be. And it's my fault for my limited belief. And so what I did is I changed and I said, you know what, there is no limit for us, and there isn't now. And that's why, you know, a lot of people say, like, Chris Lindahl, I came out of nowhere. And partially true, but not really. I mean, like, you made the comment, Michael Thorne, about Hootie and the Blowfish, about, you know, where they come from, and they're playing in clubs every night. Like, you can't sacrifice hard work. I mean, hard work is what gets you there. I mean, even if you spend a ton of marketing dollars, you still have to have a plan to convert them. And I think, you know, if you look at most teams in the country, like, they don't have a lead problem. I mean, anyone can spend to get leads. They have a conversion problem. Totally. And so, like, and that's just what we've been working on, is just getting better at converting. And when it was just Sarah and I, you cannot convert leads when you're doing that many transactions. And so we were just missing a lot of opportunities.
So Chris, in hindsight, looking back, what were those triggers where you could give that advice to agents that are with one person and an admin or two people? What were those indicators, those canary in the coal mines, that should have triggered the growth of the team? In hindsight, what are those warning signs other agents should be looking for?
I think the minute that you start having conversations around being too busy, or, you know, getting home at 11, 12 o'clock at night, and you're still trying to put deals together and respond to emails, and next thing you know, it's 2:30 in the morning, and you're still responding to emails, and you're up at 5 or 6. And the biggest challenge that I've seen in agents is their insecurity to take that next step, whether it be hire an admin, whether it be, you know, hire a buyer's agent. And most time it's the hiring of actual admin, because that's guaranteed money. I mean, I remember when I hired my first assistant, like I was freaked out. I was like, I barely made enough money to even pay for it. Like, and I'm like, how am I going to do this? But everyone said, oh, you got to hire an admin, and that's going to take you to the next level. And I think in reality, like the thing that for me is, it was my own insecurity of like, I don't know how I don't know that I have enough leads for someone else, or I don't know that if I can afford to bring someone else on, instead of just taking that leap of faith and saying, I'm going to make it happen.
Dave, how does that differ from your warning signs as you've indicated in the last year and a half, it's more and more necessary to start to grow the Enviro Realty team?
Well, very similar. We weren't at the level he was at. And the canary in the coal mine is a pretty good analogy, because kind of what Chris is saying, I think, is, you know, the canary in the coal mine, when he sniffs the bad stuff, he goes clank. Well, I guess Chris could probably attest to the same thing. Getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, working 11 o'clock at night, you know, one day you wake up and you go, what's the point? You know, I'm working like an idiot, and I'm going to have a heart attack and drop dead. Right.
Right.
I didn't really have any indicators other than, you know, and you know, we had a little bit of a challenge with what Chris said, is coming to the realization we did need to hire an admin. And again, thank you to Lee Brown for pushing me to do that. And we did it. And it's actually, we're going to have like a 25 to 35% increase in our income this year because of it. And we're not even done yet. And, you know, and we got caught in another trap, and that trap was, now we're really, really busy, and it's still only the two of us and our one buyer agent. We need more people. And then finding the right is something I hope to be able to tap into here, finding and how you go about finding those right people. We've interviewed people, but we walk away going like, there's no way I'm putting this person on my team.
Yeah. And we're very selective on who we bring on. I mean, we have four interviews before we even make a decision. And our first thing isn't business, it's culture. Like, we make sure that culture is right before we bring anyone on. And anyone that's, you know, we've had people that have traveled around the country to come see like our culture. Like, it's something that very few teams and brokers around the country have. And I'm fortunate that we have that. But as most of you know, like, your team or your company or your brokerage or whatever you may run sort of becomes a reflection of you, and you tend to attract like-minded people. And so if you're, you know, and I've seen this over and over again, if you're someone that wants to hit the phones all day, well, you're going to attract people that love to be on the phone all day, and that's fine. But for us, like I am very, very outgoing, and I attract people that want to go have fun, and we're always doing fun events, and we're doing it as a team. And I think when you nail the culture piece, there really is no limit.
And on that note, it's, culture is very, very fickle and hard to find. And one of the reasons why we left where we were, our team, and we came to RE/MAX, very similar story for that Chris had, was a culture issue. And as much as you try to change culture, if the people around you don't want to change, and this is outside, you know, a team where you're in control of that culture, I think it's very, very important. Culture is extremely important to surround yourself by people that have the same mindset. It's what I think brokers in general really need to have their focus, their finger on culture. And I just don't know how a lot of those brokers are wired. So Chris, you control the culture within your team. Did you find there was a culture shift? I think you mentioned it, that you were surrounded by you know, different people when you came to RE/MAX. What did RE/MAX at all aid in the culture outside of the team?
Yeah, I think the piece that RE/MAX played in that culture is we were able to bring agents in with attractive compensation structure. Like, that's what RE/MAX allowed us to do. We have our own team office. So we have an office that's outside of the brokerage, which makes culture a lot easier to control when you don't have other agents. I mean, because let's face it, most real estate offices, it's a negative environment. Like, I mean, it really is. Like, people are complaining, deals are falling apart, people are arguing. It's sort of a hostile environment, and we needed to remove ourselves from that situation as soon as we could and get into our own in our own space. And what's different about us is, like, we have such a positive focus all day, every day in our office, and it really operates like a family environment. And quite honestly, I'll give a lot of that credit to Sarah Pickens, who, she's her nickname on the team is Mama Bear. Like, she watches out for all the agents, and like, I'm not as big of a piece in the culture anymore. I was, I'm obviously now focused more on like generating business and doing different things and focused on what I'm good at. And Sarah's great at the nurture and the, you know, and making sure that everyone feels good. You know, she's helping answer questions about transactions. Essentially, she, with our team, she's sort of the de facto broker in a way. Like she's operating as that, she's that point of contact for everyone on our team with any challenges that they have.
When I found out you're coming on the show, Chris, I got a couple of questions sent in to me from people that are sort of at that team level that are, that continue growing. And Shannon sent me a couple questions that I thought were really, really good. You know, you're the face out there. You're involved. And at 650 deals, clearly the client isn't getting you the way they were getting you when you were doing 25, 50, 75, 100.
Right.
So how do you juggle that? And how do you take care of handing the client from one part of the process off to the transaction coordinator, off to the next person? How do you handle that to make sure that they're getting the Chris Lindahl team experience, but from different people?
Right. So one of the things that, you know, that's a good question. So one of the first things that we did, and I would challenge anyone that's in a team to really sit down and do this, is come up with a mission statement, values, and vision. And I don't mean just going on Google and copying someone else's. I mean, take like 6 months and really sit down and figure out what you stand for. And then when you bring people on, they have to stand for what you believe in, and they have to follow your values, your vision, and your mission statement so that your message is carried out to every single client. Because you're right, I can't talk to every client at 650 of them. So you have to know that you're bringing people in that follow the same mission that you do. And I'm just as guilty as everyone else. When I first started the team, I went online and just hijacked someone else's value, vision, and mission statement. Like, here we go, we're ready to go. It felt okay, but it wasn't me. And now we literally took like 6 months, and our whole office, every room has decals of our values, vision, and mission statement. And the one that's sort of come to the front, and this is actually on a jersey of our mascot, but it's be authentic. Like just that we just want people to be authentic. Like don't pretend to be someone else. Don't lie to a client. Don't do any, just be yourself, be honest. And like that's our biggest core value now. And when we hire people, we literally go through that list and we look right at them and say, here's what we follow at the Chris Lindahl team. Are you comfortable with these? And we make them read them and we want a response back to make sure they're okay. Cause we know that if they follow our values and vision and mission statement, they're going to treat the clients right. And then the other part of to answer that question is a lot of it's scripting. So when someone calls in, they all obviously ask for Chris. And if they ask for Chris, you have to educate the consumer on why it's better that Chris isn't coming, where Chris can focus on the marketing. Chris can focus on the operations of the overall marketing of all the listings or whatever it may be that Chris is working on, and why Sarah or Shannon or Cara or Haytham or whoever's on our team, why it's better for them to be at that appointment because maybe they own follow-up or maybe they're more skilled in negotiations. And what you really have to do is you have to show them why the industry needs to have multiple people in the transaction. Because I look back to when I was an individual agent selling 175 transactions, I didn't provide any service, zero. And now when a client comes to us to work with us, we have multiple people in the transaction where our goal is to provide world-class service and a Disney-like experience. Like you don't get that same experience when you're working with an individual agent, unless that agent is only selling like 4 or 5 houses a year. And so I think the biggest part of it, again, is our own insecurity. We think that everyone wants us. They don't really want us. They just think that they need us. When we actually take the time to educate them and tell them why Chris isn't showing up, no one leaves and no one doesn't list with us. People still work with us. Nothing changed. But the traditional mindset is like, oh, I need to be there because I'm better. It's like more of an ego satisfying thing than anything else. And the reality is there are people in our organization that are a lot better than me at some of the positions where they don't even want me there. And I think that's just is getting over that. And that's, I struggled with that 3 times when I started the team of trying to get out of production and working with clients where I would go back in because we'd maybe lose a couple listing appointments and I'd feel like I needed to take that control back and go back in. And it was a battle. It was a really big battle, but you just have to truly believe that it's going to work out. And now I'm fully out and I'm committed to the mission that we're headed towards. And And it's honestly like our growth is also attributed to me focusing on running the business and not in the day-to-day of meeting with clients. Because meeting with clients day-to-day isn't going to grow your business. I mean, that's like the transaction treadmill.
And, well, and there's a limit to how much there is of you. I mean, that's
Capacity. There's capacity for sure. That's a good question, though.
I assume that the team concept is built into your buyer and your listing presentations in detail, I would imagine, right? These are people you're not going to see. This is one is doing this. They're all experts at what they do, that kind of a thing.
Correct. Yeah. We have a very detailed listing presentation that everyone on the team uses the same one, and a buyer presentation. So we use the same presentation for everyone.
Chris, when I got in the business back in the early 90s, there wasn't teams outside of husbands and wives. That's the only teams that sort of existed when I first got in the industry. And so there wasn't an opportunity as a young agent to go to a team to learn from the best in the best way. I think the first couple of years of your real estate career are those formative years. And when I have young agents come up to me and says, you know, how should I start? I say, go find out a killer team that does it right, who has their ethics put together, who don't count any corners, and learn from them. Do you find, or do you have people on your team that are learning from the best and eventually have ambitions to be their own guy or girl? Or do you have committed lifelong, never have the ambition to be the business head of the business? How does that differ in your hiring process?
Yeah. Good question. So when we interview people, if the conversations were like what you just, you know, the statements are like what you just said, like, I want to do this, I want to be on my own someday, like, that's not a fit for us. Like, we want people that, the things that we look for athletes that have been on teams, and we look for military. Like, those two, like, we know that they're going to get up every morning, no one's got to tell them to get up, and they've been in a team environment before, and they want to be part of something that's bigger. I think most people, if you look at in this world, don't want to be an individual on anything. I mean, you look at the group thinking of riots. Riots don't start with one person. They grow bigger. I mean, everyone wants to be a part of something that's bigger rather than individual. And one of the things that when we're doing that interview is I am just asking questions to see if they just want to use us for 6 months or 12 months and leave. We've had no turnover in 2 years. No one's left yet. I'm sure at some point someone will leave, and we'll support them in doing that. But I think we provide an opportunity that the market doesn't offer here.
Awesome answer. One of the things that fascinates me about you guys, and I think it's everyone does it in some manner or whatnot, but your willingness to completely commit to traditional marketing and to completely commit to new marketing. I think quite often in this industry, we've got social media as the magic bullet, and traditional marketing has no place in it, or social media will never work, and I'm sticking with my bus bench ads. Because I think you do a lot of those sort of traditional marketing touches as well as new ways of marketing. Talk about the opportunities that both those ideas, especially when you can marry them together, really sort of have an impact in your marketplace.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I was one of the early adopters to Facebook. I think we're just about 25,000 likes on our page right now. And everyone asks, well, how do I get to that point? Most agents have 100 or 200. And I got in early where the likes could grow organically. Now it's obviously everything's pay to play, pay to see. So I got in early to Facebook. So I was fortunate enough to have a lot of brand recognition from social media before it started to get so busy and convoluted. And now I'm looking at, and by no means am I an expert in this at all, I just study the way that people act and what they do. And I know that it's hard to get someone's attention on social media right now. Because if you look at every person walking around has a device, and they're literally posting, sharing, liking. I mean, it takes seconds to produce content online now. Seconds. And everyone can produce content now. I mean, I look at my newsfeed and 3/4 of it's real estate agents about their new listing that no one cares about.
Yeah.
And it's just over and over again. It's very difficult to differentiate yourself on social media. So over the last 2 years, I've been slowly shifting back to a more traditional approach where I know that I can guarantee impressions. I don't know for sure that I can get impressions out of social media because people are flying so fast down their newsfeed. But I do know if someone's on the radio or they love a radio station, that if they're listening to the radio, I know that they're going to hear Chris Lindahl. I'm sure of that if they listen to that radio station every day. I'm sure that if they're driving down the road and they see our billboards, that they're going to see those when they commute in the morning and when they commute home. I'm not positive that they're going to see my newsfeed every single day.
How about that argument? And because you do TV commercials, that you know, a Gary Vaynerchuk argument that no one's looking at billboards because their heads in their phones, even when they're driving, or the argument that no one watches commercials anymore and the PVR something. I think one of the smart things you've done is you've aligned yourself in the sports world because that's the only live television I watch. I'm sure it's the only live television Dave watches. How do you say, okay, I can measure the number of impressions on Facebook because they actually give me a number. 3,000 people saw this post. How do you, I mean, and you're a measurement guy. Let's get down and measure it. How do you justify the ROI of traditional marketing?
That's good. So radio is a little bit easier because you can have, you know, you can have a vanity phone number and a landing page and you can track phone calls and you can track signups. You know, billboards and some of those things are really difficult. You have to track lift over every marketing campaign that you have to see if it's raising everything else up. It's just another touching point. And it's one of those things that you truly can't prove. And I think that's why the traditional industry has died a bit, is because, you know, if I go meet with someone that's selling billboards, they can't tell me what I'm getting. They can tell me how many cars are going by, but they can't actually tell me what I'm getting. If I go meet with a social media expert or a Google expert, they can tell me exactly what's going to happen. And I think that's where they get, you know, they get a bit of a bad name. And Gary's, I think Gary Vaynerchuk is right. Like he's saying, like, people have got their heads in their phones. And for a long time, I believe that. But here's what I think where I lost focus. And I would just share this with everyone in the group. You have to understand who your client is and what the demographic of that person is. And so I thought, like, all of my friends are probably driving around on their phones texting at Facebook or whatever. They're probably not seeing a lot of the billboards. But I'm looking for people, baby boomers, that want to sell their house and downsize. And I want to take that house and I want to advertise it to millennials to purchase it. And so most baby boomers are anti-texting, anti-phone stuff. I'm looking for more listing generating opportunities than I am just straight branding. And if you look at who are you actually trying to target, like, and billboards is one example, and that's one that's really hard to track, but there's a lot of different things we do traditional that we're strictly trying to target home sellers, not buyers, not millennials, not tech savvy people. We're trying to target people that need to sell their house, that need someone like us that are tech savvy. And to reach those people, it might not always be social media.
Now, how do you flip that script? How do you go, I want a baby boomer home, but then I'm going to flip that and market that to a millennial? How then, once you have the listing, do you sort of flip that switch?
Correct. Yeah. So what you do is you list an owner that was a baby boomer. They know that they're very weak at social media and the internet. That is obvious. You talk to anyone in that demographic, they will flat out tell you that they don't know what's going on. And they know that they need someone that understands it. And so you tell them, like, you're hiring us because we're social media experts, because we're internet experts. We're going to go out and we're going to go find the most likely buyer because your house is a 4-bedroom up, 2-story, or it's got 3 bedrooms on the main level. And we know that this is going to be a younger family and they spend most of their time on social media. And that's what we do. And so when you tell them that, they know that they need us to deliver to the most likely buyer, because, like, the average age on our team is 34. The average age of most of the buyers of these houses is like 31 or 32. So they're on a lot of the platforms that we're on and that we really understand. Whereas, you know, you look at a 57, 60-year-old baby boomer that's trying to sell their house. I mean, that's maybe a little young, but trying to sell their house, they wouldn't even know how to get it broadcasted out to the masses on social media.
But they recognize that it's important.
They recognize it's important. I think when it first started, it was sort of a buzzword that most people didn't feel like they need to be a part of, like Facebook. Oh, I'm not signing up for that. I'm not getting a smartphone. And that's sort of how it started. Next thing you know, what happened was is all the parents followed the kids to Facebook. And now the kids are on Snapchat and Facebook's for old people. And now, so it's all evolving into something completely different. But most, what I found is most home sellers we meet with in that age group, they know they're weak there and they know that they need to be strong there to sell their house.
Dave, it's something you hear over and over again. My client's not tech savvy, so I don't need to be tech savvy. You know, my client doesn't know how to leverage Facebook, so I don't need to leverage Facebook. You know, it's exactly what Chris is saying. They know you're supposed. They would do it themselves if they could. They would do it themselves. And Dave, you hear that all the time? Is that they're looking for you because you're the best at what they do, and they can't do it themselves. How do we educate agents that? Paperless and all this sort of stuff. These are not options, in my opinion.
Well, they aren't options, and we've talked about that just about every episode here that we talk about that. And you know, I don't know. Mobile Agent TV is trying to educate them, you know, and all the other means go to the convention, but you know, either they got to get on board or they don't. And Chris, you know, Facebook for old people? Come on.
No. But
no, I didn't say that.
Dave, that's your job perception. Requires you to understand that.
That's a perception, though.
No, absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're absolutely right. And when it's all in our presentation, we have it in our presentation. Here's how we're going to do no print advertising. Here's how we're going to do it. It's the internet. They all get that. They all get it. It's the internet. And you're absolutely right. If they figured out how to do it, they really wouldn't need us. They go to the for sale by owner site, especially in the market we're in right now, or they go to Facebook and put their house up there, and they probably could have a couple of buyers tomorrow morning. But
What I love is that Chris and his team market traditionally to explain to baby boomers how important new media is. Like, I just love that concept.
That's an interesting
going to them traditionally so that you can market in a social world. I love that.
And you mentioned about Gary and Gary Vaynerchuk. I mean, he's really pretty spot on with a lot of the stuff, but I think he makes a lot of blanket statements, and you have to understand. I mean, your market, you have to understand your market, right? So you have to understand what's happening in your town or your area. And then you also have to understand the age. And I mean, I think the age is the big thing. You have to understand, like, who are you going after? Because if you don't have a clear definition of who you're trying to go after, like, Gary's probably right, it's not going to work. Like, you really need to define, like, where is your client? Like, what are they doing? Where do they do? Where do they go? Where do they eat? Where do they travel? And just being a student and being observant and just watch what happens. Another example is like, and this is, you know, is just the things that we do. And I talked earlier about being a student. It's like, my daughter spends all day on Musical.ly and she's recording. I mean, it's crazy how fast that platform has blew up. I mean, they're recording songs. And I mean, you look at, you know, I mean, Pokemon's kind of come in and out. I mean, you're watching all these things. Not that they're all related to our business, but you still have to watch the way that people behave. And I think that's one of the things that you look at. You look at traditional agents when a lot of them kind of their ship sunk, they weren't watching what people were doing. They were trying to do the same thing.
I agree. I mean, you can take all the examples, Blockbuster, you can take all these examples where it wasn't changing. It was going to be one of my later comments because I do want to talk about something else though. Yeah. I mean, it gets to that thing about Snapchat a little bit, Chris, is the aspect of, I don't think you need to be on Snapchat. I am, but I know, and I know you are. I think you have to understand what it is. And I think you can't ignore just understanding what it is. I think it's good to go and understand it and to know how it works and to know who's there and then to make the decisions whether it functions in your business or not. But to say, it's crazy. I mean, like you said, how many people said Facebook will never, ever happen in my business? And here we are. Facebook is big in your business. So you say, hey, you got to figure out what's going on Musical.ly, you know, that there's another one. And not all will stick around, but something will. Something will eventually replace Facebook. And I think there's a lot of agents out there that couldn't imagine their business without Facebook. And something eventually will come along at another generation that will replace it. And that could put you out of business if you're not aware of how quickly it's changing. And I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. I just don't see it changing.
No.
You know, Chris, I assume that all this stuff you're talking about with on your team, probably yourself, is doing all of that, correct? The question sort of is, if you're looking to form a team, either, you know, it's a lot of work. Well, the stuff you're talking about, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of hard work. So either find somebody to do it for you if you want to grow your team and get involved in this kind of marketing, or do it yourself and hire other agents to go out and take care of your clients, kind of like what you're doing. It can get scary for some agents to say, well, I want to grow a team, and then I got all this other stuff I have to do, and I still have to take out the clients, and I still have to run the team. And it's that e-myth thing about do what you're best at, hire people to do what your passion is, like Michael. My impression, I know Michael pretty well now. He does a lot of things. And I think his passion is giving back, and his passion is video. And that's part of it. He's a master at it. I'm always going like, where does he have time to take out his clients? But he does find it because he's got a lot of energy. But other agents, they don't all, go down that path. So
yeah, I think you're
caution for people. If you're going to form a team,
make sure everybody fits
into the right peg.
I also have a killer team, right? And that allows.
Well, you do. You have two great, great ladies.
So one of the things that you just have to figure out, like, and you're Dave, you're like 100% spot on. You have to figure out not only what you're good at, but what do you want to do? Like, what's that passion for you? Well, you can obviously tell mine's marketing. Like, I love it. Like, I love trying to understand people and solve that puzzle. For someone else that's looking to grow a team, if they're weak at marketing, they're not going to sit in that seat. They need to find someone else. And that's one thing. If you look at my team, like, I truly believe that you're only as good as your worst agent or your worst employee. Your team is only as good as that. If you look at the core people that are the closest to me, I surround myself with some really intelligent people on my team. And so, yes, Chris Lindahl gets credit for a lot of it, but there are some people that are damn good at what they do and are really a lot better at it than I am. I talk about marketing because that's what I'm passionate about. There are other conversations we could have on this show where I could sound like I have no clue what's going on. And so it's just if you focus on your passion, there is really no limit. And it's just you're exactly right. Like, just figure out what is that passion for you and what are you good at, and then hire around that.
Chris, we met in Vegas. It was February last year. The hockey season was starting to wind down. You had purchased a bunch of ads for that year's playoff run.
Yeah.
The Wild were on the fence of making it or not making it. Chris Lindahl was freaking out a little bit. Where do you get the gut? And I want to back this up. I said RUI in the promo video. I should have said RUI. I understand RUI. I embrace RUI. All the money I've ever spent on video equipment has an ROI. Everything that we do for our clients when something goes wrong and we fix it with financially is an ROI. I think a lot of agents in our industry don't understand the concept of ROI. And I'm not trying to be belittling of people. I just don't think they get it. When someone posts on Facebook, what free app should I use to manage my email? There's one for $4 and I don't want to spend it. That person fundamentally doesn't understand ROI. They wouldn't. If this app is this much better and costs twice as much, that's the one you should be purchasing. They don't understand ROI. What's the mindset? What's the business person's idea of outlaying money to be on the commercials during, and what I want to relate this question to, Chris, is back to the average agent that's never going to buy airtime. Just the concept, the understanding, the business mindset of putting money out, knowing that it's going to come back larger than it went out. Where does that mindset allow you to cut a check to be the official realtor of the Minnesota Wild?
Right. And by the way, I love your chalkboard up there. I don't know if that's for the Minnesota Wild or not, but
that's for you. There's a couple Easter eggs. There's one Easter egg right there for you. And there's another Easter egg right here.
I love it. So one of the things that, there was a study done about, and I love this. Like, so there was a study done about sports teams and about celebrity endorsements on the trust authority that's transferred to the brand because of that partnership. And if you look at Minnesota, the nickname in Minnesota is Minnesota is the state of hockey. Like, everyone like lives hockey here, and the trust level that the Minnesota Wild has with us and putting that on our brand is at a level that I can't get from anything else that I do. And so not only are we branding the commercials to us, but we are also branding the Minnesota Wild in partnership with the Chris Lindahl team, which adds a level of trust that the Chris Lindahl team could not create on their own. If we did, it would take a very long time. So it just sped us up, and we leapfrogged quite a bit of it. But So the second part of like what makes me want to do that and some of those things, there's a really good book by Tim Grover called Relentless. I don't know if you guys read it.
No, before. I haven't. It's on the list.
It's a phenomenal book, and it talks about the different styles of people. And there's a cleaner, which when you read the book, you know, you'll relate to one of them. And I'm for sure a cleaner. And is that you have to win. Like you have to win, and you have this will to win. And he's the former trainer of Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James. He's trained them all. And he just talks about like you have that sense of like, the cleaner doesn't always show up, but when something needs to happen or the wild, you know, or we need to do wild commercials or we all of a sudden out of nowhere, it's like, it's game time. And you know, like no matter what, that this person's going to perform under any pressure that they receive. And that's sort of like how I've always been. Like, I know that like the wild is adding so much value to our company that when every single person in the whole state is watching one thing, I need to be on there. I mean, the wild playoffs, every single person in the state of Minnesota is on there watching that live, like to your point. I mean, with the DVR world, you know, I mean, unless it's live sports or maybe the news, most people are recording it. And I know that like, even if it's quite expensive, I know that if every single person in the entire metro area sees Chris Lindahl on a commercial with the Minnesota Wild, that will pay our team dividends for the next 30 years.
But that's that. Go back to that ROI conversation.
Yes, what? Correct.
And you said it even at the beginning of the show, and I picked up on it. You're like, you know, you had to convince yourself to spend the money. And even though you're broke, you had to get but had to hire an assistant and you didn't know how you're paying. What can you say to an agent who in their mindset, spending $100 is $100 less that they've earned? That is a mindset. People
For sure.
believe that.
For sure.
Versus I'm going to spend $100, $1,000, and therefore I'm going to get $1,000, $10,000 back. You can't possibly have a very successful business without understanding the fundamental math equation that is ROI.
For sure. If you show me anyone that's extremely successful in any small business or real estate business, they've spent money on a lot of things that didn't work that led them to a point of what does work. And there's a point in business where you fully understand the recipe. And you know, like, and for me, because marketing is my thing, you know when you do something, you know if it's going to return. And the reason you know that is because of the experience you've had on doing things that didn't work. You now know what's going to get people to respond. You're probably right. Like, if you're spending $100 for your first time, I don't think it's going to go very well. Like, unless you have an expert behind you, unless you have someone sitting in a marketing seat at your company that fully understands how to get people to respond, you're probably going to lose the $100. But those $100 you just need to learn from. Like, and that's what we did. Like, I remember, I mean, I spent a lot of money on things that didn't work. And it's a result of like, now I make very few mistakes in our marketing because of how much money I spent on things that didn't work.
Yeah, because I totally agree with you. I mean, that's just businesses getting down to that right formula. And you're never going to figure it out without walking that path, without taking a little bit of a risk, without finding out. But to come from a place where I'm not going to spend any money unless, you know, I get something first, it's just not going to build a business, Dave. You're not going to build a business if you're not willing to run it like a business.
Well, it's not a business mindset at all. And you know, in our business, our realtor business, the business that we're all in, there's very few business people in this business. Just a little 5% up near the top. Business people.
I totally agree with you. I mean, it's like opening a restaurant and saying, hey, how can I cheap out on some ingredients so I can make more money? That's the best way to keep people from ever coming back if they're not going to have a good experience. Like if your first thing is how can I cut the costs, you're never going to have a killer restaurant because the quality won't be there.
For sure.
Chris, one of the questions we had that Shannon wanted to know too as well, and I'm interested in this answer is, what technology, what format, what way are you keeping internally everyone on the same page? Meetings, emails, updates. How do you manage so everyone, you know, you're not double checking, you're not double tasking. How do you manage that internally?
Yeah, within our team. So first part is I don't do that. So Sarah on our team, we have a secret Facebook group where all of our communication, whether it be team announcements, whether it be, hey, I need someone to help me cover a showing, or, hey, I've got something funny on this inspection, what do you guys think? Every single thing that we do communication wise goes into that secret Facebook group on Facebook. And we've tried, you know, we've tried a couple other Slack and a few Vox and a couple other Voxer. And I can tell you that our private Facebook group gets so much engagement, and we, there's not a better place to run a team than on a secret Facebook group.
And so are you in a group, or are you also on Facebook Messenger? Is that how you're keeping everyone sort of?
No. So we have our Chris Lindell team. It's just a secret Facebook group where people post and everyone engages. And that's where all of our communication for everything we do in our company happens.
Wow. And then how about managing documents? Are you guys paperless? How are you guys managing 657 transactions? That's a lot of documents. Yeah. How does that system work with inside the team?
Right. So we have a listing coordinator and we have a contract to close person, and we're paperless. We use AuthentiSign because it's directly integrated into our MLS.
Yep.
We have Matrix for the MLS and it's directly integrated in. So we use AuthentiSign. But everything's done electronically for the most part. I mean, there's still some paper that has to be passed back and forth, and earnest money checks are done electronically through trust funds. And one of the things, and this is, I think, this is a testament to our team and how talented of individuals we have in the seats they're in. We have two admin that are processing 650 sales. That's it. Two. And they handle, and one of them handles the contract to close, the updates and everything else.
I mean, that's three deals a day if you get rid of weekends and holidays.
Right. And they're handling it all, and they're doing a really good job at it. And it's because we looked for talent, and it took us a long time to find it, but we have it now. And to your point earlier, Dave, you were talking about, you know, having people and adding people and some of that stuff. You have to have a bench. Like, you can't just go into you said the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. The Patriots can't go into the NFL season with just Tom Brady. He's out for four games. They go into the football season with Tom Brady. Are they going to show up with no quarterback? I mean, you have to have people ready to step up and fill in. What if someone gets sick? What if, you know, and there's so many different things that can happen in this world that you just have to have more than just a couple agents. And it takes a while to build up to that. But once you start to build that bench, you can backfill anything that happens in your company.
Also systems and checklists, which I'm sure you have.
We have it all. Yeah.
We talk about that all the time, systems. And so that if all of a sudden, if everybody's doing what they're supposed to do on time, when they're supposed to do it, put it on the checklist, put it into the same system, that person could just disappear the next day and somebody could come in, look at it and go, okay, I know just where we're at.
That's exactly
what we have. At the level you're at. I mean,
that's exactly. We literally have a process for everything that happens from when you get a contract to what happens to when you get a listing. Where do you post it? How do you post it? And when do you have to update the client? Everything that we have within our company has some sort of system or process that has to happen.
Well, you said it earlier, you know, you said a world-class Disney experience. I mean, Disney, if you've ever seen a documentary about Disney, the rule book is so thick about this is what it means to be here. And that's what permits them to have that consistent experience, is that there's no question where everyone knows exactly what needs to be done at every moment to create, you know, what seems to be effortless.
So one point on the Disney thing is like, the thing that I always try to remember is like, I take my family to Disney. I call and I spend $5,000 on the phone and I hang up feeling good. And I always wonder, like, in my business, like when they call to list their house with the Chris Lindell team, do they hang up feeling good or not? And like, that's something that they have to get, that same feeling that I get when I call Disney, and that's our goal. But one thing on Disney, which is something that we didn't talk about, which I think is another testament to why we're having the growth we are and why we're going to continue to grow, is it's the visionary integrator relationship. So Rocket Fuel is a phenomenal book that I would recommend everyone read that's trying to grow a business. And so having the right visionary integrator relationship is key. So obviously Walt Disney is the visionary. I bet if I asked 100 people, no one would even know who the number two person at Disney was. Everyone says Walt Disney built Disney, but he didn't. Walt Disney had the vision, and he had an integrator that carried out the vision. And so if you don't have an integrator in your company yet and you want to grow a team, that's something that has to be on the top of your mind to figure out who's going to be the person that's going to help me execute all this. Because obviously I'm a 100% visionary. Like, I have about a billion ideas a day. Two of them are game changers and 98 of them are awful. Yeah. And but I think they're all great, and I'm trying to sell them to everyone in here, like, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And you need to empower someone to tell you no. And the challenge for like someone like myself that's a visionary is you don't take no very well. And so like when you empower your integrator to tell you no, which is Sarah on our team, when she tells me no now, it slows me down because I've empowered her to tell me no. And now I think really deep, where before, like, I was just like coming up with ideas. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And it's just like, it's exhausting for everyone around you if you're a visionary and they're not. And so just to that point about Disney is like, just really think about what your business looks like and who's going to be that integrator if you're a visionary, or who's going to be that visionary if you're an integrator, is a key piece to the whole company.
And Chris, you said that about getting off the phone with Disney. You know, you've got a mascot that went on, was like a kin to, or a offshoot of the Wild mascot. You're doing billboards, you're doing all this social media. Is there any better marketing than a super satisfied, happy client? Like, is that, like, nothing trumps that? And nope. Especially in a 2016 social world, how important is happy clients delivering on the expectations to your business growth?
Yeah, the client experience is the number one thing for anyone's business. And I had this conversation with someone, like, it was probably like a week ago, and I said, like, we have now in our market, we probably have maybe 100,000 people that are out selling for the Chris Lindahl team that are not agents, that are saying, oh, you've got to call Chris and his team. They do a phenomenal job. They're here, they're there. They did wonders for this person. They made more money for this person. And the minute that you start burning people, whether it's customer service or whether it's the way you act in public in your area where you do business, the minute you start burning people, the number of salespeople that you have out selling clients to be a part of your brand or to use you drops significantly, and you'll never get it back. Mm-hmm. You'll never get it back. Like, you have to treat people right in this business. And it's amazing. And I know this because it's amazing how many agents that we work with that are complete a-holes. And it's like, that isn't going to get you anywhere. And that's why your business is where it is, because of the way that you treat people.
Reputation first, not everything else. It was a great, you know, when we had, oh my goodness. What was his name? I've got his book right here. Scott Stratton. Scott Stratton was on the show, Dave. He said, reputation is not a renewable resource. It's something you can't renew. You can't get it back. Once you've burnt it, it's gone. And I think a lot of people, especially the agents out there that get into a transactional mindset, the first thing that can go is the thought about the reputation. They're just trying to get that one deal. They're starting to think about themselves. They're not thinking long-term. They're thinking next quarter. They're not thinking about 2 years down the path. And the first thing that goes out the window is the other person, the experience, that reputation, Dave. Nothing else matters. I mean, nothing else is a higher priority than reputation.
Yeah, I can probably right now, somebody 20 years ago who I did a real estate transaction to, and they were turned out to be a jerk and a dirtbag, didn't represent their client, and they were transactional. And I still got it here, because if I got to run into them again, that's stuck. It's stuck. I didn't change my mind.
Yeah. And also, too, is for agents, I mean, look at Chris is going to come on and tell about secrets. You, Dave, do your listing presentation, which I think is one of the most sacred documents in any successful real estate agent's business, is their listing presentation. Mm-hmm. And you sit in your own marketplace and tell it to everyone else. That goes such far, I mean, not only to your clients, but having a reputation amongst other agents in your marketplace that you're going to do more deals together than ever against each other. Mm-hmm. That is important to have, because that's what negotiation's about. It's not being adversary. It's about finding common ground. And we always assume negotiations is taking up a contrary position, which will never work in successful negotiations. And reputation, not only in the public, but with your own industry, it will make your life a lot easier and grow your business a lot.
Now, there's one piece to the reputation thing that I think is overlooked. Success damages your reputation within your industry. Like, and it's unfortunate that our industry is this way, but if you ask local real estate agents about the Chris Lindahl team, yeah, they're going to have a different opinion of us than the clients will. And at the end of the day, like I tell everyone on our team, like, let's not worry about what the other agents are saying. Let's worry about how our clients feel, what the experience we're giving them. And I think too many people get caught up worrying about what other agents or other brokers are saying than focusing on what the client is actually benefiting from using us.
But Chris, to defend my point and to echo your point is that that's not based on fact the way that they feel. Like, you didn't get a bad reputation.
No.
I said all the time, I knew instantly that I was that our team was cornering the market in getting to the consumer through video the moment all the naysayers came out of the woodwork.
For sure. That's when you're doing
that's
something.
That's when we knew it was going to work, when everyone says what you're doing will never work. Because it's just a reflection on themselves. So
sure.
earning a bad reputation deservedly is different than getting a bad reputation or negative naysayers because other people have a negative feeling about themselves. It's
totally great. Two different things. Yep, totally agree.
Chris, before we wrap up and we could go on a million more times with you, you know, and we're going to talk about it next week with Keith Roy too as well, is the benefit and the importance of connecting face-to-face every once in a while with your past clients, giving back, having an event, whether it's, you know, a Christmas event or a holiday event. Your guys' pumpkin event is like mind-blowingly successful.
Yes.
And so maybe people are not going to get the scale that you guys have because of the amount of past clients that you have. What's the recipe? What's the value? What's the ROI of doing an event like you guys do with your pumpkin event?
Well, like you said, you really can't put a number on happy. Happy clients that are out selling for you, it's hard to quantify what that's worth, because if you're out at a restaurant and you're thinking about selling your house and five past clients of the Chris Lindahl team come up to you and say, you've got to use Chris, you've got to use Chris. What's the ROI on that? You can't put a number on that other than now in our community, everyone says, oh, you've got to come to the pumpkin event Chris Lindahl does. He gives away 10,000 pumpkins. Like, the value that that gives us in the community is worth every single dollar that we spend on it. You can't quantify what the actual ROI is of having an event like that, but I can tell you it works, because now everyone thinks that we just give away pumpkins. And to bring the community together, like, this year will be between 10 and 15,000 people will be there.
And so what's the recipe of the event, Chris? Like, it's just not here's a pumpkin goodbye. What's the recipe of the event that sort of is built to this 10,000 people thing?
I'll tell you the full story real fast in an abbreviated version. When I came to RE/MAX in August 2014, RE/MAX University called me right when I joined and said, we've heard a lot of good things about you. We'd like to fly to Minnesota and film you for a week. Do you have any events or anything coming up? And I'll be honest, I had never done an event or anything. And I said, I've never done an event. I don't know why you're flying to interview me or follow me around. And so I went to Sarah. I said, we've got to do something. We've got to create an event. They want to fly to town and we've got nothing. And so our old brokerage did this really lame pumpkin, throw a couple pumpkins on the parking lot. People showed up. It was just terrible. It was embarrassing to even be a part of it. I said, like, let's make this like a family. Like, let's get everyone involved. Like, let's get people in the community to volunteer. Let's tie in things for kids to do. Let's tie in things for parents to do. And so that's how it started. And RE/MAX University, when they came to town, said they had never been to an event that large for an agent or a broker in all the time that they had been shooting these videos. And we had no idea what we were doing. And so
opportunity, right?
Yeah. So we had no idea. And so now you look at it, like, last year we have, you know, it's on a Sunday. It was on a Sunday. So we know, and this is like understanding like how people think, what they want to do. We know that most people on Sunday want to watch football. So we brought a trailer with all of the football games so that the dads would come and watch the football when the kids played at the park. They're on the bouncy houses. They were grabbing pumpkins. They were doing face painting. They were eating cupcakes, eating ice cream. And then we tie it all into charity. So every single dollar that is made on the event goes back to charity. And the only place where there's money generated is we ask for donations for the pumpkins for charities. So when you go through a line and you're getting a pumpkin, if you want to donate something, you can. You don't feel obligated. And we donate 100% of that money to emergency housing in the community. And then this past year, we had 6 food trucks, and 20% of all of the sales from the food trucks went to emergency housing. And so we really try to tie it into, like, Dave's point with Mike, and one of your passions is like giving back. Like, when you give back and do things like that, it puts you at a different level. You are a real estate agent first, and you're just a member of the community trying to make a difference. I'm sorry, second, you're a member of the community trying to make a difference first. And
well, yeah, Chris, can I speak to that? Because I think it's such a, like, that's actually what someone connects or cares about. Like, you being the number one agent in Minnesota, it pales in comparison to
no one cares
about my neighborhood. Like
for sure.
There's no better, bigger win than actually, why would I use you? Like, you know, like if you, like, you're a good person, you're giving back. Like, that's just, to me, the best marketing ever. And the other thing too, is I think in a 2016 world, Chris, is that passion can't be faked. You might say, okay, we'll give back because it benefits us, but over time, you know, you won't follow through with it, or it doesn't become, I'm a huge advocate in my community. And I just know that's who I am.
I'll just share just real quick. I know we're almost out of time, but I'll just share real quick. The first thing that I ever did for giving back, which really put me on a different level personally and business wise. And it was back when I first started at my brokerage, and it was 30 below zero outside. And I said, and it was the time where everyone had these poster boards, and it was like, if I get a million likes, my mom's going to buy me a dog and a rabbit. I remember that phenomenon of like, I'm going to get this or I'm going to get that. I'm like, our society is so broken. It's like, I'm going to get this or I'm going to get that. And so I wrote up is I said, for every single like I get, I'm going to donate a pair of mittens to a charity of your choice. So we had emergency housing, we had sharing and caring hands. So I got 4,500 likes when I was less than a year into real estate. And I, to be honest, I really didn't have $8,000 to spend on mittens, but I did it. And I did it. And I spent $8,000 on mittens, and I put them in bags. And I went to every single place that people told me to go to. And I took a picture outside with just big trash bags and said, like, these are brand new mittens that I'm dropping off. Thanks for participating. It was the first time that I had that feeling of like really giving back, like what that actually meant. And I fully understood it. And the thing is, I didn't even do it for business. I did it just because our society is so backwards about like me first. And when you really, and you're right, when you truly passionately believe that like that's what you're going to do and your mission is to give back and to help people, like there's no one that's going to stop where you're going. Like it's just a feeling that if you haven't had it, I would challenge everyone that watches this to really think deep about what you're actually trying to do in this world and what your mission is. And once you get that feeling of satisfaction that you're actually making a small difference, it's an unbelievable feeling.
What did we talk about last week, Michael? What did we talk about last week? Karma. Remember?
Yep.
Karma. So it is.
Well, the thing too, it comes back to almost what you said at the beginning, Chris, is you just can't cut and paste someone else's why and figure it off as your own. You sort of got to walk this path. What are you doing it? What's your mission statement? What's your belief? What's your customer experience? Like this all, these are the things that when you figure them out will change your business, but it's not an easy thing just to like magically come up with and say, oh, this is why I'm doing this.
It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight, but you got to become really clear. And I don't think you can borrow somebody else's. You might have the same connection, the same why as someone else, but you just can't say, hey, that Chris guy's successful. Let me go to his website and copy his mission statement. And this is what I believe in. That doesn't work that way. It doesn't.
And people, you know, and I think one of the things is like the people within your organization, they'll know. They'll know if it's not you.
Yeah,
they'll know, like, if you like, hey, here's our mission statement, our values, like they need to feel what you are and what you stand for. They can't just read it. They need to see you living it too.
Yeah. I totally agree. Dave, traditional question at the end of the show, takeaway.
Well, I think from what I got from Chris, which is pretty common sense, is that if you're going to build a team, you have to be the leader and you have to hire the right people around you to fit in the right pegs. If you do that and you're the leader, you can build a successful team.
Nice. Chris, how do people get a hold of you? I mean, you're all over social, but how do people get a hold of you if they want to reach out, send a referral into the Twin Cities? How do they find you?
Yeah, the best way to reach me is probably, to be honest, kind of sounds kind of funny, but be like Facebook Messenger. I can't accept any more friends. Unfortunately, I don't know why they have that 5,000 limit on Facebook. It's really annoying. I know there's probably people listening here that are mad that I didn't accept the request, but it's really frustrating. It's capped at 5,000. That's probably the best way. I don't respond to a lot of emails anymore, just because for me, I truly believe that that's just trying to satisfy someone else's need and not yours. And so you're always dealing and reacting to other people's problems. And so the best way is probably Facebook Messenger. I try to respond to all of those. Even if we're not friends, you can still send me a message on there. And one thing for sure is like, and I tell everyone this, like I will truly help anyone, whether you're in my market or outside of my market, like me helping or whatever I can do to help will just make our industry as a whole better. And if we get to a point where everyone's willing to do that, it just raises the bar for all of us.
The most consistent theme, 3 years on the show, all from successful agents, Dave, every single successful agent we come on says, I will give and give and give and give. And don't be jealous, but Chris and I are friends. I'm in the top 5,000.
I think I am.
I think you are too. So there you go. I really appreciate it, Chris. What I admire about you is you've grown a great team. You're super transparent. You're exactly who you are in person and what you appear to be online. You're a given guy. RE/MAX is so fortunate to have you. Our industry is fortunate to have you, man. You kill it, and I really appreciate you giving us.
No, I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Next week, we come to you live from RE/MAX Recharge in Toronto, special time Wednesday evening, September the 21st, 2:00 Pacific, 5:00 Eastern. We're going to have guests Lori Van Dinther, Kim Miner, and Keith Roy. We're going to do a real estate roundtable, talk about a bunch of different topics. We'll bounce them back and forth. It'll be interesting too, because we'll be just coming off of a bar camp, so there'll be a lot of topics that will have come up there that we can ban around. We won't have Dave on the show, regretfully, but that's what happens when you're going around to these live events. We're going to do a live show from Boston in October, and I'm thinking maybe there's a chance that the Red Sox and Blue Jays would be in the playoffs. Maybe there's a chance. I might find my way down here. We might be down at Fenway, but that's how where you'll find us next week. Thank you guys all for watching. Oh, quick note on the end, and I should have done at the beginning. Something happened with our iTunes podcast. I've got a message off to iTunes. We'll figure it out. And a bunch of people saying that they're missing the audio podcast online. We'll get that back up. Thank you guys all for watching. And as Melanie Galley of RE/MAX Fort McMurray wants us to end every show, tell 5 other agents about Mobile Agent TV. Our audience grows every week. Dave and I are so pumped to be back. We've got awesome episodes from here on out till the end of the year for sure. Let's just reach out to amazing guests like Chris Lindahl that will donate 1 hour and 7 minutes of his time, which we appreciate greatly, very, very much. Thanks, Chris. We appreciate you. Thanks, Dave. Thank you all for watching. We'll see you all next Wednesday.